Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Cindy Baldwin.
And this is the midweek version of Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast that we do every week, because why not? For the fiber talk, for the needleworkers that we are. Yeah. Yes. We were talking about a t-shirt, a Fiber Talk logo, and then yes, I stitch. That could be a t-shirt. I may think about that. So no stitch hour tonight. We'll have one next week. And Sunday's guest is Caroline Gilman of Atlanta. Jeez, I can't talk. This is going to be a long show. Atlantic Blue Canvas. Painted canvas. And Caroline is a designer and painter of her own canvases. I think she's gotten big enough now that she sends them out. But she also has a bunch of other designers, painted canvas designers, that she is basically their distributor.
Oh.
I think there's maybe half a dozen other designers, mostly young ladies, who just do it out of their home, kind of a side hustle thing, from what I could tell. And then she is the distributor clearinghouse for all of these people. So there's a tremendous variety of painted canvas. Of all kinds. So you get different designers with different things. And so very cool. And a very cool story of hers. So that's Sunday, Atlantic Blue Canvas. It's it's pretty neat. Different, different model. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yep.
Cool.
So that's Sunday, Caroline Gilman. And then we're talking about doing a couple of Sunday shows where us co-hosts answer questions. Like we might go to some Facebook groups and there's always people asking questions, a lot of them beginner questions. So we're talking about doing a couple of Sunday shows where we just take some of those questions and answer them. So if people who are listening have questions that they'd like answered, you know, it doesn't have to be beginner questions. I mean, if it's something advanced, you know, we'll take a run at it. If not, you know, we'll get somebody who does know. But send them, Gary@WeTalkFiber.com. Send those questions, and then when we put these shows together, we'll see if they don't work out. So we're looking at doing maybe a couple, maybe three. I don't know, just as a different thing rather than on a Sunday interviewing someone. So you know, fire them at us. If you want to do something really hard, fire it at us. We'll take a whack at it. One of us will know something. Yeah.
Or we'll or at least we'll have an opinion.
Yes. Yes. Count on that. So, so do that. So we're going to do a couple of those here coming up in short order. So fire them off. If you have questions or an issue that you keep encountering, you know, send it to us. We'll take a run at it, and just a little something different to do. So, the sign-up opportunity for the Fiber Talk Needle Arts Weekend is you can still sign up. There's room in the room, and you can sign up. Please do that quickly, as soon as you can, so we can start to get a head count. And February 18 now is the deadline for the room block. So if you want to get the room rate, you got to get in by the 18th of February. And then after that, whatever rooms are not used, if there are any rooms not used, then the hotel takes those back because, you know, they're going to use them for somebody else. And then you're paying the higher rate.
Right.
Or you end up at another hotel if they're sold out or whatever, you know, all the things that could happen. So get signed up. URL for all the information, wetalkfiber.com/weekend. And there is a PDF to download that gives you all the details, how to sign up. And it's really simple. All you do is you send an email to the email address that's in the thing. And that actually goes to Marga. And you just say, I want to register. You say what of the 8 classes that you want to take, what classes you want to take. And you can take them all if you want. We've got enough room and we'll add classes. If a room fills up, we'll add another class. So you, just send that in. Margo will send you an invoice for the $300, and then you book and a link to book your room, and then you book your room, and then you're all set. So it's real simple to do, and all the details are in there. And we'll also, if you sign up for Kim's class, we'll send you the chart for this is the for her class. You have to stitch something 4 by 4 inches, and this is a design Kim did. I'm putting this between me and the mic, so now you can't hear me. But this is a design that Kim did. So we'll send you that, and then you can go to Kim's website, and there are some other charts there on the homepage that are 4 by 4 inches. Or if you have your own 4 by 4 inch piece, but it's got to be 4 by 4 because the finishing materials that Kim is putting together are designed to finish a 4 by 4. Or 4-inch diameter circle, square or circle, 4-inch diameter. They're designed for that. So you got to bring a finished piece to do this, because she wants you to see how to get all the pieces lined up and squared up and everything. So just showing up with a blank piece of canvas cut for 4-inch piece, it's not going to do the job. You need to do that. And then so that one, and then if you take Jeanette Tombaugh's class, then that one you have to send $10 to Jeanette, and then she will bring a kit for you. But that's the only cost for the 8 classes. All the other classes, there's no cost whatsoever. It's built into the $300. So get signed up. Now and then Kim's going to have a boutique shop there, a pop-up shop, so you'll be able to shop. And one of the things that I kind of kick myself for it. You know, how many times have we talked about events that people, especially young people, can't go, say, for an entire week or an entire weekend because they just can't take that time away? Mm-hmm. And so then we go and set up our own event. And what do? We set up a weekend. Mm-hmm. And then, it occurs, wait a minute, what if people can't come for a weekend, but they could come Saturday? In driving distance, or maybe they could come Friday night, stay overnight, Saturday, go home. Just can't take a whole weekend, but they could do a day and experience that. So we, light bulb goes on, and we're going to add a day rate. So for $225, so it's normally $300 for the weekend. So for $225, you can come and experience and be part of the Saturday effort, all day Saturday. You just show up whenever Saturday, leave whenever. You can take the classes, but if a class is full of people who have signed up for the weekend, then there may not be room for you. But we're going to try and accommodate everyone. We've got a whole day Saturday, and we've got a room, and we can double up classes. But if you can't get in a class because we just simply can't make room because of weekend people, you're going to have to miss out on that. But there's 8 classes, so, come on, you'll get something. And then, of course, all the stitching and then refreshments and whatever it is that we have set up. So for $225, so when you download the piece, then you'll designate them a weekend or a Saturday only on there. So,
good idea.
I think so, yeah. Practice what we preach. Crazy idea. so that's an opportunity, especially if you're within driving distance. Look at all the states around St. Louis that are within. You could, 2-3 hour drive, get up in the morning, drive, spend an entire day. You might get home at midnight, but one day. Your husband only has to deal with the kids for one day. Tough it out, buddy.
Yeah.
Breakfast, lunch, dinner, and bedtime for one day. You can do it.
Yes.
Yeah. So that is a new option. Check that out if that fits your schedule better. Makes it relatively inexpensive. 2.25, and if you don't have to stay overnight, that's a nice day of needlework fun and classes for 2.25, that's pretty good. So I think.
Yep. I think so too.
Yeah. So sign up for that. 8 classes, stitching, Friday night, all day Saturday, Sunday till 3 o'clock. 8 classes all build into the thing. Nice hotel in an area where there's plenty of shopping and plenty of restaurants and 3 needlework stores in the St. Louis area, all within easy driving distance. So you can, yeah, come and go as you please. Parking lot is right out the back door, right out the entrance, really, to where we're at. So, you know, you say, all right, we're going to go out for lunch. You can come back. You park close by. It's all on one floor, all in one area, so you're not having to go up and down escalators and stuff. Made it as simple as possible. So, but sign up. Sign up soon so we can start to get head counts. And we hope you'll join us. Please join us.
We'd really like to meet the people that listen to us.
Yes.
Like to meet you in person and put names to faces. And
yep. It would be cool. It would be cool.
See what you're working on.
Yeah. 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 I think that's for me. I think that's, other than having the event, is to actually, you know, shake the hand, meet the people that we've, you know, that listen to us, and the Wednesday night crowd that's there every Wednesday night, you know, 60, 70 people, whatever it is, every other Wednesday for the stitch hours, you know, we communicate with them all the time. Be nice to meet those people. So, So there we have it, March 21 to 23, all the details, wetalkfiber.com/weekend, and there we do it. I am so proud of myself.
Why?
Because it is now, we're recording on the 21st. I started on the 5th. I have not missed a day of stitching.
Good for you.
Check that out. That could be more stitching than I did in the last 3 months of 2024. Easily. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, I'll admit, stitching every day. And no, it's not been 2 stitches. Okay, I'm at the requirement. I have actually sat down for at least a half hour each of those days, sometimes 2-3 hours each of those days to stitch. So, you know, like I stitched this entire thing for that Kim designed, stitched that entire thing, and finished it beautifully, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think the tape job I did on the backside of that is to behold. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. And then working on Gay Ann Rogers.
Oh, nice.
This piece, it doesn't look like I've done much, but quite frankly, it's a lot. Her Lady Mary geometric. So
that's really pretty.
And now I'm starting to be able to stitch and get actual color. It's cool.
Yeah.
I did the middle a long time ago, and then it was all this infrastructure stuff. And So now, I'm actually stitching with actual thread instead of wrestling Krynek all over the place. So, So
Beth says it counts if you just kind of play with your fabric and threads.
Yes.
You don't actually have to stitch.
Right.
So, but for me, if I sit down to stitch, you know, I need my glasses and my frame, and you know, I usually sit in my recliner. I put my feet up. I don't just sit down and stitch for 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm going to stitch for an hour and a half until I have to get up and move around a little bit.
Yeah.
And then, so, you know, I don't really have anything that I can just kind of pick up and put a few stitches in.
Yeah.
Which I know she does.
Right.
So that's easier for her.
Yeah. Well, she's used to stitching kind of on the move, like when, you know, Sunday afternoon they go to her mother-in-law's, so she's always got something she can take with her. Yeah. And I'm not generally set up like that. I'm with you. Yeah.
Yeah, but I have been trying to stitch most every day. I missed probably a week early in the month, but I finished 2 things.
Oh, see, that's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah, it's, you know, stitch every day, at least put in a stitch or play with your stuff. Now, this past weekend, this room had become a train wreck from, from all the stuff from doing the magazine. I never went through all that and cleaned that all out.
Oh yeah. Got rid of it all.
And then doing all these shows, stuff builds up, you know, like after most shows, it's a good half hour putting stuff back where it belongs and everything else. And just in general, things had gotten out of control. And so you can, you know, people who are watching the video, you can see behind me that the open shelf nightmare, visual nightmare, is no longer there. I bought a cabinet, a big cabinet. So Saturday was putting that together and storing that and putting everything in that. And then the shelving unit that was behind me for so long, that went in the closet. I didn't lose that. Okay. Yeah, so now I've got, it's nice. So then, I went through this place all day Saturday and most of Sunday. I went through this place like crazy. Dust rag, down on the floor, cleaning out all the corners and the baseboards, everything. It got done, yeah.
All the little threads that didn't hit the orc bin.
Yeah. All of it. Vacuumed. Yeah, everything. Yeah. So, it got handled. And but still, Saturday, I even at the end of the day, I actually put in a half hour stitching, even after all of that. And I worked just about all day Saturday. And Sunday, I got done mid-afternoon, and so then I stitched with the football games on. But I'm getting it. I'm not going to give it up. Nope.
Good. So are you pretty well done organizing?
Yeah.
Good.
No, the closet needs to be gone through. I mean, I cleaned out some, but I've got some different plans for that. That becomes another project. And there's no light in there. It's one of those, you know, it's just a closed closet. There's no light, and I would like to have a light in there. So, there's some work to be done in there, but even that, I cleaned out some of that. And, but this room it's a whole new room. Yeah. All my tabletops have room on them. And, you know, the other thing is I've had two computer setups, one for the magazine and daily work, and then one for recording, which takes a more powerful, especially these videos, takes a more powerful setup. Well, I've realized now that I don't need the work one. So that whole thing is going to get torn down and put away. And I have a big screen for that. So I'm going to have a two screen setup for FiberTalk stuff. And it'll all be on one table. And,
nice.
Yeah, that's, but that, you know, that's a whole other, mm-hmm. you know, moving stuff over and, yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah.
But yeah, this room is a whole new place. It's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
So have you got an inventory of your stuff?
Did
you do any of that?
What? Are you kidding me? No. No. No way. No, I picked up the two file boxes that I have, plastic file boxes that I have all my charts in. I picked those both up. Holy smokes, those are heavy. Yeah, they're full. Yeah, no. No, I did not do an inventory of anything. No. Mm-mm. No, and I'm not going.
That's the next step.
No.
Otherwise, you buy duplicates of stuff.
Yeah, maybe that'll just have to happen for a while. Mm-hmm. no. So anyway, progress. But no, I'm not doing, and not going to do an inventory. I'll get the closet. I'll get the closet organized. What I'm going to do with not stretcher bars, but scroll bars and slate frame bars, which mm-hmm. should not be stood in the corners because they could warp, especially mm-hmm. with the humidity and then dry back and forth in St. Louis. I'm going to get a big 4 or 6 inch PVC pipe, mm-hmm. and they make J hooks to support the pipe. So in the closet up high, I'm going to get some plastic J-hooks, and then I'm going to lay the pieces of pipe in the J hooks, and then I'll be able to slide the scroll frame bars and the slate frame bars in those pipes. So they'll lay flat and be out of the way and out of the dust and anything else. And then when I want to use one, I'll just take that piece of pipe down and dump them out on the table. So that's part of my closet project. It just seemed like a good way to store those things that they're either in use or out of use for an extended period of time, and you don't want them damaged. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've got a couple of lateral file cabinets that look like furniture, but instead of the file drawer being long this way, it's wide.
Oh, left and that's, right.
Yeah, I put my stretcher bars and stuff in one of those.
Yeah.
One of those drawers. Now, the really long scroll bars won't fit in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't have that many of those, and I don't have any really long stretcher bars.
Right.
So most everything will go in there.
Yeah. So so you're achieving the same thing. You're keeping them out of the dust. They're not getting moved around, and they're laying flat. So because it's like those Jenny Aiden Christie slate frames. If one of those got warped, I would just cry. You know, that would not be good. So
now we had Sue Reed do her tips and techniques lecture for our local chapter this month. And one of the things she suggested for stretcher bars is writing the length on every side on both ends. So it doesn't matter which way it's turned, up or down, you can see how long they are.
Oh.
She also suggested marking the center.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good too. So just sit down someday and just get them all out on a table and just mark them up. Oh, but marking the center, that's excellent. Who thinks of that till, you know?
Right.
Wow. But that's good. Yeah, all sides to mark the length. Because every time I have to get a tape measure out. How long is this, 12 or 14? Yeah.
Well, I have some of mine marked, but they're not marked all the way around. And they're not marked on the ends. They're marked in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, so, and then I have a lot that aren't marked.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you got to get the tape measure out or lay it out. I've got a big, one of those big cutting mats on one of those lateral file cabinets. So I can, you know, just put them on that to line them up and see how long they are.
Yeah.
And that works well.
Yeah. Well, I'm adding that to my tools class at the retreat. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good.
And the other thing that she said is you always have a ruler. Your stretcher bars are 12 inches. You know, if you need 12 inches of thread, measure it against your stretcher bars.
Oh, that's good too. Yep. Yep.
Pretty simple.
Well, I have to watch for that class. That sounds like a good one. Yeah.
She does it four chapters.
Okay.
And so I don't know, you know, what her schedule is. So, but if I hear about her doing one, I'll let you know.
Yeah, that kind of stuff is just so handy. It saves time, saves hassle, and you know, it's a good idea. I want a 14-inch length of thread. Just lay out a thing, and there you have it. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, she had I think it was a 15-page. She called it the visual handout. And she just basically went through that during our meeting online. Our winter meetings are all online, so we don't have to travel at night. And so she just, you know, blew it up, and she had cursors so she could kind of point at things as she was talking about it. And she just went through it page by page. And man, there's a wealth of information in that thing. And then she gave us another PDF that has is I don't I haven't looked at that. I don't think there's a lot of photos in it, but the first one had a lot of photos in it, close-up photos, so you could really see what she was talking about.
Yeah, wow, that sounds like a great class.
Yeah, it was.
See, those kinds of classes to me, I'm not going to say are more valuable than a project class, but darn close, because they help you everywhere. Mm-hmm. And you never know when a tip is going to show up, is going to come into play and make a difference for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I've taken enough classes and projects, done projects of hers that I knew most of that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, classes with her.
Yeah.
I've taken several classes with her and done quite a few of her pieces. And she puts some of those tips and techniques in her instructions.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. For like, actually that's one of the pieces that I finished was, this is called Garden Path.
Oh, that's yes. Oh, wow. Love it. Yeah.
And I changed the colors.
Of course you did.
Of course.
Yeah.
So this is done with stranded silks for the most part. There's a few other threads in there, but the overdyed is a silken colors called orange licorice. And it's what I used in the center.
Uh-huh.
And then the outside border.
Yeah.
Along
I see
here.
It. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's gray, dark gray and orange.
Yeah.
It's a really pretty thread.
Whose thread is that?
Silken Colors. The Thread
Gatherer. Silken Colors. Yeah.
The Thread Gatherer.
For listening people, we'll make that, it's beautiful. We'll make that the lead photo and we'll put it on Instagram so you can see it. Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. So we did it through CyberPointers as a correspondence course, and mm-hmm. it's taken me three years.
Hey, you know, whatever.
But, you know, it was on my WIPCO board last year, and I'm not doing WIPCO again this year because I want to finish all the stuff I was working on last year.
Yeah.
So I was working on it in December and was like, okay, I'm going to get it done.
Keep going. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. You reached that point. So,
yeah. So I had a lot of her suggestions, tips and techniques and things were in the instructions for that. And then she had also provided extra instructions as part of the correspondence course.
Yeah.
So yeah, if anybody has an opportunity to, you know, if they belong to, I don't know if she does it for EGA. I don't know why she wouldn't.
Right.
But she does it for ANG chapters.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have an ANG chapter and you'd like an online class, you can reach out to her.
That would be a good one. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you're stitching, how hard do you work? Let's see if I can explain this. How hard do you work to make sure that you keep the hole open? Like if you go down, that you don't go across the hole so that the thread is covering the hole on the back side, that you come back. How hard do you work? I mean, I think I work too hard at that.
No.
You don't worry about it.
I don't think you can work too hard at it.
Okay.
I think it's critical.
Okay, good. I'm still sane. Okay.
Well, especially if you're going to share holes.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got more than one thread going through a hole. And so back to this. These are right here in this section.
Mm-hmm.
Those are lazy daisy stitches. And there's like two layers. It's hard to see the bottom layer. It's just a solid orange.
Yeah.
The top layer is the over dyed. But so there's four of those lazy daisy stitches going into each of those centers, which means there's two threads for each stitch.
Oh.
And there's eight stitches.
Uh-huh.
So you really need to keep your tension. And I struggled with that, with these lazy daisy stitches. It's difficult.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to pull them too tight.
Right. They lose the daisy part. Yeah.
Right. And I've got some that are looser than I would like.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that helped is she suggested opening the hole with a laying tool.
Oh.
So the centers of each of these little flowers are, I opened it, I enlarged the hole with my laying tool.
Okay.
So that the threads could pass through without, you know, bunching up too badly.
Yeah.
But I do make a real effort to make sure that as I'm going to my next stitch, I am going in the opposite direction from where my stitch went down.
Yes.
And that's something that she talked about in her tips and techniques about how important that is. Now, I'm sorry. I'm going to let you look at the back.
Okay. So for people who are listening, Cindy is talking about there's a thin border on each side and then the center section that's just inside that border is where the lazy daisies are. So when you look at the picture, you can see, figure that out. Yeah.
This is the back of the lazy daisies and that's kind of a hot mess.
Right.
But when you look at the border that goes around, this is just a Gobelin border. It's over two diagonal. Same thing for the gray around here and in the center up here. There's a lot of it.
Yeah.
And you get a different level of coverage depending upon which direction you're going. And that's where the slant of your stitch is important. Sometimes mm-hmm. you need to change the slant of your stitch in order to make sure that you get the same amount of coverage and pull
yes.
on that thread.
Yeah.
Now, I wasn't consistent about doing that. In some places I did and other places I didn't. And you're probably not going to be able to tell it from this, looking at this.
Mm-hmm.
If you looked at it in person, you could see it.
Yeah.
So kind of down here.
Yeah.
On this corner.
Mm-hmm.
This little stretch right here. I should have changed the direction of my stitch. Come up or, you know, gone. It's hard to describe.
Right. No, I know what you mean. Yeah. Yeah.
But when you make that effort, it keeps the hole clean. I mean, it's not empty,
right?
But it's not blocked by thread that's going off in the same direction that the stitch is going.
Right. Yeah.
So,
okay.
I work hard to make sure those holes stay open, especially when I know that it's going to be shared.
Yeah. All right. I'm not nuts because I work really hard at it too. I mean, to me, I think I can't say most critical, but probably, I mean, I think tension is probably most critical, but it's a close second is your stitch path. How are you going to tackle an area? How are you going to tackle a stitch to get the cleanest stitch and the best edge? I mean, this, cause that's the other part of that. If you keep that hole clean and open, the edge of your stitch is so much nicer.
Right.
And to me, I spent a lot of time on that, just a lot of thinking time. If I go to to do the next section. I'll actually pause and just mentally say, all right, how am I going to go through this? Mm-hmm. What path am I going to take? Where am I going to start? You know, when I end a thread, how am I going to tie it off? How am I going to close it off? Mm-hmm. So that I can keep, and you can't always do it.
No, especially in cross stitch.
Yeah.
And you know, I wasn't really self-taught. Mom kind of taught me how to do cross stitch, but you know, I just always would kind of drag my thread. If I had to go, you know, skip two or three stitches to continue with the next mm-hmm. row of stitches in the same color, I just drag my thread over there. And I think most people probably do that.
Yeah.
I know people that are going cross country, you know, drag their threads, but, and I didn't know any different until I started doing needlepoint and learned about keeping that tension on your stitch and keeping that hole open. And I don't do that with my cross stitch anymore.
Yeah.
I will do everything I can. I'll change the direction of my stitches. You know, I might go, instead of normally going lower left to upper right, I might go upper right to lower left so that I can, you know, come over here. I might still drag my thread, but I'm going to do it so that I can start in a way that I will get a good corner here and a good corner here.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
So the back of my cross stitches, stitch pieces.
Yeah.
Looks pretty crazy sometimes.
Right.
Because I'm making a real effort to keep those holes clean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that, yeah, I that sounds just like me all the time. Because you take in cross stitch, for instance, with letters, a lot of times I'll end a letter. I'll just end off a letter rather than carrying the thread to the next one, because I don't want that last stitch to have that hole covered. I want it crisp, and because like this this thing that I did, this design Kim I did with Kim. It probably won't show, but I carried a lot because it didn't matter. I mean, this is just a demonstration thing, so I just got really sloppy.
That looks good.
It was kind of freeing because I would get to the bottom of the letter and just carry it over and keep going, you know. But if I were doing a reproduction sampler that was going to get framed and everything. Same thing, out of my way to make sure all those things end off clean. And that's the other thing. If you don't keep a hole clean and then you have to go with another thread through that hole, you end up shoving the thread to the side. You either split the thread or shove it to the side. Then you don't have a clean junction there. And
Stitch will look wonky. It won't be diagonal. Right. It'll be, you know, some kind of other angle.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's noticeable. And okay, so you take a cross stitch piece on 40 count, say a 12 by 14 sampler on 40 count, okay, single thread. You say, who's going to notice? Over the course of that whole thing, visually, in my opinion, visually, that has an impact. That one stitch here, one stitch there, you probably never notice, probably never make a difference. But overall, if you do it a lot, it makes a difference. All those things are not as clean as they could be. The edges aren't as sharp as they could be, and the impact is lessened. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
So here's another thing. This is the other thing I finished. This is my needle book.
Yes.
And it has got a boatload of Smyrnas, and Smyrnas are another thing that I change the direction of my stitching to make sure that I have clean holes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't matter. This is the front and this is the back. you know, whichever way I'm going,
yeah,
I will make an effort to make sure that I have that long pull
yep.
across the back so that I've got a clean hole that I'm going into and a clean hole that I'm coming back out of.
Yep. Yep. So well, that worked out great. Oh yeah, I was going to compliment you. I saw the pictures you posted, your little metal tags for all the needle sizes. That's excellent. Really beautiful.
Yeah, I thought about I could have embroidered it.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do that much more work.
Yeah. No, that's so beautiful. That's Tanya Berlin, right?
Tanya
Berlin. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Berlin Needleworks, I think.
Yeah, in Canada. Yep.
Yeah. And it very simple stitching. She considers it a beginner piece. I kind of went crazy with it.
Why not?
She used, hers is very simple. She used one color of pearl cotton. I used three.
Uh-huh.
Four. Uh-huh. One of them is an overdyed. And she did French knots. I put beads on it. And I had these little flower sequins.
Mm-hmm.
Over here.
Yep.
So the stitches on this are Smyrnas and eyelets, full eyelets in the centers and half eyelets, three quarter eyelet down here in the corner.
Yeah.
Just real simple stitching, but it took me a lot longer than I really thought it was going to just to get the two sides stitched.
Yeah. That's beautiful. And what a great, great tool, great way to keep your needles too. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't keep my needles in a needle book. Usually I just keep them in the case, you know, the packages they come in.
Oh.
But I really liked the way she assembled this as like a real book binding.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I wanted to try it. And it's not perfect by any means. I, you know, but it's good. It's
yeah. Good it's enough. Nice. Yeah.
And it matches my scissor case.
Outstanding. All right. Look at you.
Yeah.
Yep. Beautiful.
So, yeah.
That worked out. No, I keep my needles in a needle book. I had this made, you know, it's, mm-hmm. I mean, they're, you know, they're just jammed in there, but, I find that best because I take this, like when I was traveling a lot, I just grabbed this and then I knew that I had whatever size I would need. But this does not have enough pages. So, and I have the pattern. I bought the pattern. I really need to get after that. Cause that's where yours has the plus is you have all your needles. You've got all the pages.
Yes. And I added, so she did, I think she did five. I did six.
Uh-huh.
So I have, four pages that I don't have anything in.
Oh, that's a plus.
So, sharps.
Yep.
Crewel needles.
Yep.
You know, whatever I've got room to put the oddball stuff in.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't have anything in those right now, but they're, you know, they're available.
Yeah. Because you know, you think
something else.
Yeah, you think about it. 24, 20, 22, 24, 26, 28. Okay, for your standard needles, but then sharps, however many sizes of those you want, milliner needle. If you do stuff that needs a curved needle, there's two or three sizes of that. Gold work, that kind of thing. Yeah, if you're doing a variety of techniques,
right.
And to have all, to me, to have all your needles in one spot is handy. Cause I know, well, you know, I'm sure everybody does, on this Gayanne Rogers thing with all this Krynek, when I had to finish off a thread behind Krynek, If I got stuck doing that, I tried that I did that a few times, and then I just started doing away and waste knots because way too much hassle. Mm-hmm. But going to a thinner needle so you can get it underneath that krinic is almost an essential. So then for me on the needle minder is at least two sizes of needles. And
well, right. And when you're, you know, when you're working with different kinds of threads, like on the garden path, a lot of it is stranded silk, but there's also Neon Rays Plus, I think it is, that I used.
Mm-hmm.
And silken ivory.
Yeah.
It's one of those silken wool, which is a fatter thread. You know, so if you use the same needle, well, for one thing, if you try to push a fatter thread through the needle that you're using six or three or four strands of floss in, it's not going to go. And right. If you do get it in there, it's just going to wear the crap out of it.
Right. Yep.
So I had at least two different sizes of needles mm-hmm. on my needle minder on that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a rare piece that I only have one size of needle. Rare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I always have. Well, and when I started doing on the Gayanne Rogers, this is a pepper pot silk, and I was using a 26 a 24 with the krinic, and I had uh-huh. with a pepper pot, it was getting scuffed up.
Yeah.
Cause the needle wasn't making a big enough, wasn't opening up that hole big enough. You know, the silk was getting scuffed up, and that's a real delicate silk anyway. And, I had to go to a 22. So, mm-hmm. so otherwise it was going to be little short pieces of silk, which means you're starting and stopping all the time. And,
right.
I had to go to a bigger needle. Yeah. So now that got added to the collection. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, people are always asking what size needle they should use. And I never really know what size, except when I take it out of the packet, I know what size needle it is. But for me, if my thread is falling out of the eye of the needle's too big.
Yeah. Right.
Or if I can't thread the needle is too big
mm-hmm.
or too small.
Too small.
Or if the thread is getting worn,
yep.
the needle is too small. So I that's really for me what dictates what size needle I use.
Yeah. Yeah, it's how the thread's getting beat up. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, I'll stick needles on needle minders on my lamp, you know, or in a pin cushion or whatever. And every once in a while, I pull them all out, you know, and line them up and figure out what size they are, put them back in the packages. But now I can put them in here.
Yep.
And then I still have packages. I have a set of everything from 28 to, I think I go up to 20 plus beading needles
mm-hmm.
in my kit that I take with me everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I drop a needle.
Yep.
I pull that out and I can, or if somebody doesn't have a needle, you know, I can give them a needle.
Yeah.
So I do carry all the different sizes with me in the packets.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, to me, that's, yeah, I want them all with me. I don't want to go, oh, geez, I wish I had. I hate being in that position. Yeah. Yep. But even on 40-count linen with single-strand silk, I usually use a 28.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I have to go to a 26 because of the thread. It's getting scuffed up. And
some silks are a little fluffier than others.
Yep. So then I open up the hole a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, 28 is my standard on that single thread 40 count. Mm-hmm. But nope. Sometimes you pick up a thread and you go, no, I need a little more. Yeah.
Yeah.
And who is it? Is it Susan Greening Davis that always says you should go a size bigger than you think? I think it's her. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because you don't, I think people don't appreciate, and pearl cotton is one that gets scuffed up so easy, and once it does, it loses its sheen, and
it gets fluffy.
Yep, and looks crappy, fuzzy. Quite frankly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you need to have the right needle for that, or and because it deteriorates in a hurry. And and you'll notice it when you start, and it'll be a nice sheen, and then it gets a little dull, a little fuzzy, and you go, that's not quite right.
That's one that it pays to use shorter lengths.
And not let it untwist, and not let it twist too tight. You gotta pay attention with that. It looks like a thread where you can just mindlessly stitch away, but I think you have to pay as much attention, if not more, with pearl cotton as anything.
Right. I mean, you might get away with it if you're doing a row and you're not going to add a new length of pearl cotton.
Yeah.
At the end of whatever you're stitching. But if you have to add a new length, it's going to be nice and tight and shiny, and you will notice a big difference.
Yep. And when you get it all done, and there's this field of pearl cotton, and it does not look the same, and then you're going to kick yourself. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Tension, needles, clean holes. Yeah, they all, and they add up. Mm-hmm. It's a cumulative thing.
Right.
And you don't realize it when you're just doing this little area until you've done it again and again and again over the piece. And then we shouldn't compare with others, but you notice good stitching. Mm-hmm. And when somebody has just really done a nice tight job across the thing, you notice it. You can tell, you go, why doesn't mine look like that? It's probably all those little things that you're not doing the other person is. Yep.
So Sue told us something about basket weave that I didn't know. And I don't mind doing basket weave. I know how to do it. I know how to go the correct direction and all of that kind of stuff. But sometimes the back doesn't look real neat.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes and she had a picture of somebody that had, her back just looked horrible. You couldn't see the basket weave. And what she said is that you need to make sure that you point your needle kind of away from your stitching. If you're going, if you're going up, you should point your needle this way. If you're going down, you should point down this way. And that will, so what happens if you're not careful about that is that you're catching those other threads. When you go down in that filled hole.
Oh.
And so you lose the definition of your stitches, and you may change the orientation of the stitches. I mean, even though those stitches are going to be pulled away from that hole, mm-hmm. if you're not careful, you can still snag those.
Uh-huh.
So you point your needle away from the already stitched area.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think
so. I haven't done basket weave since she told us that, but next time I do, I'm going to pay attention to that.
Yeah. That might be worth pulling out a piece of canvas just to try it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cause basket weave, I'm not a fan, but to do it well is not necessarily easy.
Right. It seems easy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a diagonal stitch. No.
Yeah. No, it's not. To get the tension right, to not have buried threads affecting the front. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not at all. And someone who can do it well, a field of basket weave stitch is just
beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just right. Just right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's practice. Hours mm-hmm. of and paying attention to what you're doing for a stitch that is really on the surface a mindless stitch, mm-hmm. but no, pay attention and it'll be beautiful. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it's that and cross stitch, doing cross stitch correctly and well, consistently, mm-hmm. huge difference. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially on loose fabric. Oh man, that's tough. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I don't ever stitch in hand, because I mean, I tend to be tight with my tension anyway. And if I don't have my piece, linen or eta or whatever, at least a hoop,
Yeah.
then it's going to be, the tension is going to be a mess.
Yeah.
And my hand starts to hurt.
Yes. Yeah.
I can hold a hoop, but if I've got that fabric rolled up in my hand, I can't do it for
Well, and
very
you're trying
long.
because you're trying to hold a tension in the fabric, I think,
Yeah,
and
maybe
stitch.
so.
And so it's you're doing two things at once. I can't stitch in hand. I admire people who do it well and do it in hand. I just so admire them because that's no, I something else can hold my ground cloth while I stitch. Thank you very much. But I think, I wonder, and here we're getting way long and I'm sure people have lost interest, but oh well. Does that, I wonder if that the tension thing and stitching tight comes from the needle point background? Because
Oh no, because when
no.
I started with surface embroidery.
Oh, okay.
And then I did crewel for a long time, and I did all of that in hoops. And even in a hoop, there'd be a little bit of puckering with the surface
Because
embroidery. So
you were tight.
I always had to block those to get them to be
Okay.
really flat. Yeah.
Okay. Because see, for me, I like it tight, but I think for me it comes from doing needlepoint for so long before I went on to anything else, where I had a canvas on a stretcher bars that I could pull it tight. And I have to remind myself on linen, there's sometimes, wait a minute, tear all that out. You just, how hard are you going to pull on that linen, How many threads are you going to collapse before you start lightening up a little bit, And yeah, I've had to do that more than once.
Oh yeah. It's so easy to do because the threads just move.
Right. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And then you get these little tiny X's and then big fat ones and no, let's try this again. Yeah. Yep. All right, we got to stop.
Okay.
Register wetalkfiber.com/weekend. Now you can register for the entire weekend or Saturday only, 300 for the entire weekend, 2 1/4 for Saturday only. And then whatever you do with the hotel is up to you. One night, two nights, three nights, however you work it out. Wetalkfiber.com/weekend. Get registered. Do it soon, please. We're going to get to the point where we need some headcounts. So we'd appreciate people getting in. If you have questions, let me know, Gary@wetalkfiber.com. And if you have questions that you'd like us to address in our upcoming Sunday shows, either beginner questions or advanced or somewhere in between, fire them off to us and we'll put them on the list. So that's it. Thanks for listening.
Bye.